Okay, so let's turn to the next section, governance, the make or break question. And I think this is not intuitively obvious to a lot of people. You have to think about it for a little bit, but this is important. It's one of the reasons I keep coming back and you hear me hammer on governance. The people you need to steal $40 trillion are very different than the people you need to reinvest the money you stole. So Mr. Global is going to need to make a turn. We have had, in a financial coup d'etat, we've had a leadership that was great at financial fraud. They were great at secrecy. They were great at killing. I keep quoting Leonard Cohen's marvelous line, "We were blinded by the beauty of our weapons." So, you know, these are folks who steal, kill, you know, we're basically talking about racketeering and mobsterism. And those folks are great if you want to shake down the emerging markets or the frontier markets, shake people down and get natural resources cheap and get lots of money rolling into global foundations to finance and provide low-cost cost of capital to your corporations. But the reality is, if you turn to those people and you ask them to design and lead great infrastructure within government, you end up with fees for your friends, you end up with kickbacks, you end up with bridges that fall down. Their skills are not appropriate. And if you look at the leadership question, right now, U.S. leadership largely consists of wealthy lawyers. And what do lawyers do? They make rules, they pass laws, they litigate, they create tax loopholes to fund global foundations and endowments. If you look at China's leadership, if you look at their political leadership, you know, they're primarily trained as engineers. What do engineers do? They build bridges, they build high-speed trains, they build power plants, they build desalination plants, spaceships. It's a very, very different kind of leadership. And so the question, if you look, it's interesting, and I posted links to the McKinsey Global Institute, which has a lot of good studies on the economy, published in 2013 a study on infrastructure and followed it up with one in 2015 on productivity and then another little one, and I've put the links up. And basically what they say is, look, we can do this $57 trillion, but we got to get massively more productive, which we can. But what does that mean? It means professional leadership and professional management focused on getting $57 trillion of highly effective and efficient projects done. Again, a very, very different leadership. Now, if you go to the countries in this world that have great first-rate infrastructure, so go to Sweden, go to Switzerland, go to Singapore, or if you review the successful projects that are happening today or being proposed, and I link to a whole group of them so you can troll around and take a look, you know, clearly the world has the capacity to produce great infrastructure, and clearly the United States has that capacity. And why we're doing it, you know, that's the question. I put up a quote from Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson in an interview that we did earlier this year in the Solaria Report, and I want to read it to you because I think it's that important. Because I think this is the most important issue, step one to getting great infrastructure and jumping the curve on this whole shift, whether it's the central banking warfare model to where we're going next, whether it's getting the infrastructure right, whether it's getting the capacity to go into space. It depends on this issue. So let me read my interview with Colonel Wilkerson. So I had asked him the 2016 elections, do you think there are national security issues that are going to emerge in those elections? Is there any hope that we'll get an intelligent discussion on a national level? And he says, I would hope so, but I don't think so. And what would that consist of? In my mind, first and foremost, it would consist of articulating some type of what I'll call, because I'm a military guy, a grand strategy to which the United States is going to hook up its economic engine. That would also include necessarily a revival of that engine. What you've got to do is say, what are we wanting to do in the world, and how are we going to refurbish our economy to do it? You aren't going to do anything of note or of consequence until you have done just that, refurbish your economy. That means $2, $3, or $4 trillion worth of expenditure on infrastructure. It means not building the old infrastructure, but building the new infrastructure, and that's where your grand strategy comes in. what is that new infrastructure? It's got to be sustainable. It's got to be resilient. It's probably got to be Metroplex oriented. That is urban oriented, not vast sprawl across the country or in it. And it's got to be light rail oriented, walkable and bicyclable, community oriented. It's got to be light energy footprint oriented. It's got to do away with automobiles and highways and so forth. And it's got to tax waste instead of wealth, at least for an interim period. It's got to do all these things that are going to prepare the U.S. economy to be hooked up to this strategy and to make this strategy work. I don't see Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton, or anyone who's capable of doing that, or worse, wanting to do that. So then I said, from what I've seen, and I don't really follow it, they're much more interested in people who believe in monopoly. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, they're more interested in power, period, and they think that's where the power is. I've got news for them. I just sat on the Climate Security Working Group now for a year. I switched over from a collaborative institute on oceans and climate security at UMass Boston, and we've been working with DOD. We just did some sea rise charts for coastal installations like Norfolk and Mayport, San Francisco, San Diego, and so forth. Let me tell you, these entities are either going to spend billions of dollars for Netherlands-like water abatement apparatuses, walls, and so forth, or they're going to relocate. This is billions and billions of dollars. Miami is going to have to do this. We already have a problem in Norfolk, and we've already got a problem with Langley Air Force Base, which you wouldn't think you would have where TAC headquarters is, because the runways are being flooded. This is serious. This is real and not mid-century. It's just a few years away. Now, when you think about it, given the future of the U.S. dollar as reserve currency depends on the success of the U.S. Navy, which means, you know, yeah, you better get this right. This is about real power. And yet, you know, no interest from a lot of wealthy lawyers running for president. And that's really what they are. They're wealthy lawyers, and they rose to power. Certainly the Bushes and the Clintons in the financial coup period. And it's a different set of skills we need now. To bring the point home, I decided for a Let's Go to the Movies this week, and for the second quarter wrap-up, I would use the Worker Trilogy, which is one of the most magnificent productions I've seen in a long time. It's by playwright David Hare, who's clearly one of the great playwrights living today. It's a three-movie series written and directed for the BBC by Hare, and it tells the story of the Gladstone Group, a syndicate of New Jersey businessmen and investors who are grossly overbilling the CIA for the construction of secret torture and rendition sites. And a portion of their padding is going for kickbacks to a global foundation, which is soon to be launched by the British Prime Minister when he retires from office. And the foundation's stated goals are, of course, humanitarian works, all financed by kickbacks on construction on secret torture and rendition sites globally. The movie pits an honest member of the MI5 civil service up against a group of sort of corrupt politicians, businessmen, and private investors, all who are lining their pockets. And it's a reminder of how expensive our current leadership is. And it was a very interesting experience for me to watch it, because I rose to success as a professional by financing infrastructure. I did a lot of infrastructure when I was on Wall Street. And yet when I got to the Bush administration and then started my own company, I got very crosswise of the people that I financed that infrastructure for and with. Because if you looked at what they were doing, they had stopped financing the New York City subway system and new turnpikes and other infrastructure I thought of as very important. And they were busy financing private prisons and information control systems that did surveillance and rendition and torture sites around the world. It's almost as though they lost their mind and went crazy on prisons and control systems and practicing literally slave labor. It was very Nazi-esque. And you wonder why would they take such a significant portion of Americans' infrastructure business and literally waste it accordingly? Now, I'm sure they would say not all of it was wasted. Some was stolen and went down to the black budget for the kind of weapons they needed to do all of this. But you can see when you you watch the Waraker trilogy, the extent to which an entire society went off on this tangent. So Waraker trilogy, if you haven't seen it, it's great theater. I recommend it, and some very important insights on what's going on in our world. There's one other issue I wanted to bring up in the governance topic because it's very relevant. We are watching every day more and more of our infrastructure redesigned for digital systems. So you read in the paper or the news about the Internet and Things, driverless cars, robots, smart meters connected to home appliances. All these things depend on digital systems, and what we are also seeing is proof that the digital systems don't have integrity, whether they have zero privacy or whether they're being used for cyber warfare. Cybersecurity issues are just skyrocketing, and if the digital systems have little integrity and so can easily be hacked, why would we even want them? If passenger planes can have their remote control piloting systems hijacked, if driverless cars can suddenly be hijacked and kill investigative reporters and so forth, if our washing machines are too complicated and we can't fix them and they keep breaking down, why bother to own them? So I think all these grand plans of reengineering things for great communication systems are about to smack head into the tsunami that these systems don't have any kind of integrity in a variety of different ways. And that takes us back to the issue of, are we going to use all this stuff to kill each other, or are we going to use it to build economies? It's the control versus, or the conquest versus creation topic. And I think it's really going to come out in the cybersecurity issues and the digital infrastructure. Okay, so governance, if we want to have great infrastructure, you know, we can't have everything run by lawyers. It's just not, certainly not corrupt lawyers. So it's nothing like a great lawyer who's not corrupt, and I'm alive because of them, so I don't want to smear all lawyers. But I have to tell you, when your entire legislature is nothing but lawyers, you have a problem. You need engineers.